Hello, everybody. I want to thank everyone for coming out. Professional podcasting with Lennox. My name is Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Stephen Glocklin. Podnuts.com, mail at podnuts.com. And yes, I'm on Twitter, Podnuts, at Podnuts. I really have given this talk three times, and I lied and said this is version two. It's not. It's actually just like 1.2, if anything. The main crux of this talk is that anyone can podcast, and we should all know that already. It is very easy. It is very frictionless to just connect something to a device and hit record, and you got yourself a podcast. There's very few things in the podcasting world we can control. We can't control the length of the show sometimes. We can't control the content of the show sometimes. But what we can control is the quality of the audio and the presentation to the first-time listener. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. The quality of the audio is that first impression. If you come across with clean-sounding audio, they're much more likely to keep listening, even if it's not something that they're really, truly interested in, but just because it's clean audio. Secondly, there's over 300 million people who are disabled in the United States of America. I encourage everyone, please pull out a pen and write down theacf.tk, our organization devoted to making software more accessible for everyone all over the world, regardless of what kind of disability you have, whether it's dyslexia, paraplegic, blind, deaf, or anything else. That organization does everything it can to help everyone. I beg people, please check it out, theacf.tk. This talk is also going to be slightly different because if you notice, I have a whole bunch of stuff up here. Stickers, mugs, bacon wallet, t-shirts, pogo plug, books, all kinds of stuff. I'm going to keep everyone on their toes, randomly ask a question. I'm going to ask if you think you know the answer, hold up your hand, and you can basically come up and get whatever you want.
42.
Wrong.
No, it's 48. Can't you see that I have no more?
Exactly. No. Podnuts.com is a website that's been around longer than I've been podcasting. I basically adopted the site from the previous owner. But he taught me a lot about audio production. But everything he taught me, he's using Windows and Mac. What I didn't know when he was first teaching me all this is everything is universal as far as terms and standards and tools. It's just the buttons might be in slightly different places. So I literally do all of the production on Linux from soup to nuts, from recording to broadcasting live, post-production, and everything else. There's over 48 gigabytes of media files on podnuts.com. This is not FLAC. This is not some insane high thing. These are literally 96 kilobit audio files. That's low, which means for it to total 48 gigs, it's a lot of data. And we have over 950 show postings, 950 different postings of individual episodes of shows, which is why it's so hard to upgrade my website, but we're not going to go into that now. Very few of the shows are solo, which means every time you add someone else into the conversation to the podcast, you get another opportunity to have someone crush the audio quality. And one bad apple can indeed ruin the entire bunch. There's no question about that. Does anyone know approximately how many episodes there is of Lennox for the Rest of Us on podnuts.com/Lennox for the Rest of Us? 165? You're actually really close, dude. Jonathan? Shirt, pogo plug, book, mug. Give it somebody else. Anyone want to come up, get something, Mr. O'Brien? You sure? We don't want Rich to have the pogo plug. No, because I'll throw it at the blind guy first. Yeah. There you go. Picking the mug. Thank you. Thanks, sir. Okay, the average length of each episode is an hour, and I do that conservatively. I've had literally 3-plus-hour podcasts. But we're just going to say, for argument's sake, an hour. With 950-plus show postings, 1 hour apiece, that's 950 hours, right? Well, the real true statement of that is if you tally the length of the show versus the total download numbers, PodNuts audio has been listened to concurrently, nonstop, calculated out to more than 30 years of audio. You hit play now, 30 years later, that audio is still playing because people are still downloading it, okay? And I firmly believe the only reason the numbers we have are as high as they are is from the emails from people telling us we sound just as good, if not better than Twit. And I'm sorry, but that's the gold standard. It's very hard to do better than that. And as you can tell by this picture, organization is not my talent. Okay? You do not have to be physically organized in any shape, way, or form to actually do good quality work. But what you will notice is on the left, you see an actual factual microphone. You do not see a headset mic or something else. And you notice the mic is on a swing arm, which means I can take that mic and put it right up against my mouth. And you also see that the swing arm is based over a foot away from my keyboard, which means if I do tap on the keyboard during my show, that vibration has to go a long way to go all the way back up to that mic. So while I'm extremely disorganized, there are actually subtle spots of genius that help the audio stay good. You also see a genuine mixer there on the left of that monitor. Mixers are a great little utility tool, especially if you want to play voicemails or external audio from your podcast. If you want to play somebody's, and dare I say, sound effects. Right above the monitor, you see two red lights. That's a compressor noise gate. Compressor noise gate is probably the most beneficial thing to audio quality. We'll get into that here in a little bit. Like I said, not organized, but that's okay. I've been doing this for a couple years now, and the one thing I can tell you is Jack Audio Stack in Linux is maybe among the most powerful pieces of technology available to people doing audio production. I can also tell you it's a pain to set up. It is literally painful sometimes to get set up with all of your hardware and all of your software, and then if your computer reboots, sometimes the configuration doesn't load exactly the same. So it's not really easy to use. No, software cannot do everything. You cannot take horrible audio and run it through filters and run it through software compressors and run it through software gates and run it through all these tools, and you will not have good audio when you're done. You will have horrible audio with less noise in it, that's all. So you have to be very careful about what task you put on a piece of hardware or a piece of software. And I'll say from 1963, there was a term coined garbage in, garbage out. I beg people to believe that is the truth of anything in computers ever. You can scrub data, you can scrub audio, you can sharpen images. If you're starting with garbage, you will always end up with garbage. So you have to be very careful on your initial recording, and if you can, double record everything. I literally had no idea the term was actually coined back in 1963, coincidentally on April 1st. But I swear it's not a joke. I swear. Does anyone want to take a guess how many applications, Android applications, have been mentioned on the show Android App Addicts? 300?
Over 2,000.
Yeah. Over 2,000? That was actually really good. 2,784 individually curated and reviewed applications on Android App Addicts. You do good. Please, if there's anything you want, just pick it up. Thank you. And I really do beg people, if you want to do a podcast, the first thing you literally do is just like in sports, you have preseason, warming up. Literally go through the motions of recording audio, go through the steps, try to edit it. Don't make the first time you hit record your actual podcast. You got to warm up to these kinds of things. And that's how you learn what is garbage and what isn't. Because what you hear when you're talking is not what is recorded on the mic. You might not notice that dryer in the background tumbling. You might not notice that van outside that keeps going back and forth. But when you go back and listen to that audio, you will definitely hear it. Here's where I literally piss a lot of people off. A lot of people who claim to be great audio files, podcasters, or whatever. Okay, there's two standards in microphones. Condensing and dynamic. They are two completely different types of microphones, styles of microphones for two different tasks that needs to be done. The positive about a dynamic mic is you never need power. You never need power, so what that actually means is it's very hard for the device to wear out. That's one plus to them. Condenser mics do have power, and they also amplify what comes in. You can use that towards your advantage, but you also got to be aware of it. Everything else that's being generated around your room is also getting amplified. You know, whether you're tapping your foot under the desk or tapping your finger when you're talking at the same time, that gets amplified as well, and it gets amplified a lot. Condenser mics can be sitting on a table in the middle of the room and have people talk, and everybody will be loud, really good and loud. So that's a big plus with them. With a dynamic mic, you literally should have it almost touching your lip and quite literally under your nose straight ahead. You can have it off to the side a little bit, but you literally need to be speaking down that like it's a tube. Dynamic mics are actually lots cheaper unless you go with a Shure SM58 or some mic that's been used by Aerosmith for 30 years kind of thing. The biggest difference between these microphones as far as it affects new podcasters is the envelope of where audio is able to hit the microphone and be loud. A condenser mic literally has a 360 angle of coming into the mic. You can hold the condenser up to your mouth straight and it will work, but it really wants to be sideways. Where the dynamic mic is very directional. I can have my mic point towards my face, put it over here and cough, and it never comes through the mic because it's not pointing at me. It's a very directional mic. And for starting podcasters, I don't expect you to be professional. I expect you to push the mic away and, you know, say, yes, hon, dear, whatever, cat, get away, whatever, cough. And just by moving that mic, you won't pick it up as much or at all. With a condenser mic, the cat scratches on the door 15 feet away and you hear it. So I'm really not a condenser fan. Here's the example of the microphone I've been using for years. Behringer. Behringer is the biggest hit and miss company in audio, who I do believe is going to be the next Sony as far as audio is concerned. They will be the biggest supplier of components and quality components. Behringer XM8500 dynamic mic. $20 at Amazon. $20. You go to a restaurant and your steak's probably more than $20. So to me, that's a steal. I like the idea of having my mixer so I can literally pipe audio. Yeah. XM8500. The mixer I use because I really like being able to have my Android phone put in airplane mode, plugged up to the input, and play voicemails and stuff. You need to encourage interaction when you're podcasting. That's a really low friction way of getting clean audio into your device and have it for all the listeners. That is almost a steal as far as mixers is concerned. $65 is a very fair price, and it is a true multi-channel mixer with stereo multi-channels. A lot of mixers say multi-channel. What it actually is, well, there's a left and a right channel. No, this is actually multi-channel and stereo. So, and that's only $65. That's a Behringer again. I don't know how to even pronounce that. 802 Premium 8-Put. They have one. They have one that has a USB. I say avoid that like the plague. If you remember Goonies, I want to say in the beginning of the movie, Goonies, the guy was going around door to door selling stuff, and he had a little box in his hand that he could fold anything out, and it did. It brushed your teeth. It was a compass. It grated cheese, and it sucked at doing everything. the more you stuff into things, my honest opinion, the easier it is to suck and fail and break. Here is really the gold standard of you actually care about your audio, and that's a noise gate. DBX has not been made for at least 5 years now, but there's no moving parts in it. There's no fan. There's no nothing. There's nothing to break. So there, it's very easy to find used ones on Amazon or on eBay for literally $80, maybe $120 if it's, you know, pretty without scratches on it. All you really have to know and all you really have to understand is the threshold. This is a compressor and noise gate. Compressor, what a compressor does is it enables when someone talks soft or someone gets excited to the end listener, it's not going to be a jarring boost in volume. It brings them much closer to being the same level. But you'll still be able to tell he's whispering, he's excited, as long as you don't overcompress. But the noise gate, and this is the part that I really do love, there's a threshold volume level you can set. And if there's a background sound that does not break that threshold, it doesn't go as high as that threshold, nothing via hardware will ever come through that microphone. So quite literally, if you have your threshold set right, this is why I like having the mic right up against my mouth, so I can have that threshold set high. I can literally turn the mic away from me, slam the door 15 feet away, and it will not activate that mic. Nothing will come through thanks to having an actual noise gate. I beg people, you can start podcasting, but you should have this on your wish list, a genuine industry standard. And if you notice, this is like a server rackable unit. This is a real, legitimate audiophile, I'm making music in a studio type of equipment. Don't get just some little desktop thing. They're usually really not as good. This one, I've been using for years and I love it. The next most important thing is the USB audio interface. The USB audio interface actually allows for tons of flexibility. I'm literally working on a system now where Leo Laporte has a Skype-a-source. I want to have a Google Hangout, a source where I want to have mini 2x2x2 computers called Q-boxes, have four of them set up, and have all of the audio coming in through my USB audio interface. If you notice, the best thing about it is it has channel 1 and channel 2. They're both true stereo channels. I only ever broadcast or download in mono. So I actually have four channels available to me, left and right on 1, left and right on 2. I can technically have the hardware behind the scenes pushing the audio into this device to where I can have four genuine channels of audio coming through a normal USB interface, and that's hard to do. But if you have a real USB audio interface from a real company that makes genuine stuff and not just one-off little thumb drive size things, you can do a lot of things. This is now only $53. When I bought it, it was $150. It's now $53 on Amazon. And here's the crazy part, people. It works better in Linux than it does in Windows. You don't believe me? Go buy one to hook it up to XP, Vista 7, 8, or 8.1. Skype will not work with it. But in Linux, it works with Skype. So it's literally better in Linux, and I love it. Cables are super insanely important, okay? It's like the tires on your car. They are in contact with everything at all times. All you got to remember, very simple, balanced and shielded. All it means is that they're basically double wound and there's extra insulation to where if a power cable is physically crossing over your audio cable, you will not get distortion coming through that cable. I.e., you can be really lazy and incompetent with your cable layout like I was, because you saw it was horrible. And that's because I use balanced and shielded cables. I can have that thing run across a 220 power line, and I'm not getting any hiss or buzz coming back in. Remember I talked about jack. I actually hate jack. I hate it. I despise it. And if I ever meet the guy who invented it, I'm literally going to like put X-Lax in his beer or something. Because it is so hard for me to get up and running. And it might be just me. But it's such a powerful and important tool to have really like virtual audio cables. You have to use it. And only the high-end editing packages in Linux use jack. So you might say, I want to use this package to edit, and it's going to say, oh, I don't see any audio input sources or output sources. You don't have jack installed. So what I did was I figured The best way to solve this is to just literally create, as small as I can, a virtual machine appliance, importable and exportable, that's already pre-configured out of the box. And the beautiful part of it is I can have every piece of hardware in my house fail. Go to any other piece of hardware on the planet, install VirtualBox, import this appliance, and it's going to work perfectly. No hardware issues to worry about at all. The one I'm using is based off of Tango Studio. A guy who cannot be here this year named John Miller did a lot of the legwork to get this thing working right. And there's no way I can thank him enough. He enabled me to literally punch out consistent audio, edit 2-hour-long podcast in 17 minutes, 14 minutes, because he enabled me to use a really powerful editor. The main tool stack, I'll say, that I use after recording a podcast is Audacity. You got to have Audacity. I mean, if you're even on Windows, you use Audacity. Audacity is the standard. You use a hammer to hammer in a nail. You do not use a screwdriver to hammer in a nail. So you should use you should use that tool whenever it's applicable and it's right to use. Now, the thing about it is it's a destructive editor. Anytime you hit anything, you see a progress meter go across it. When you have a 2-hour podcast and you hit that, and that meter goes across, you might as well just go make a bacon sandwich because it ain't going to take 5 minutes. And if you have a little bit of an old box, it's going to take an hour or more. But what I use it for is my noise cancellation. When I have a guest on the show, the first thing I do is when I hit the record, I ask them to not talk, just so I get a solid block of just their noise. And noise is not bad. Here's the whole dirty secret. Noise ain't bad as long as it's consistent. As long as from the beginning of the show to the end of the show, you get the exact same noise, whether it be a fan, an AC, a hum. If it's the same thing from beginning to end, it doesn't kill the audio, but it has to be consistent. And even from week to week, I got more than a couple hosts on my network. Every week I hear the exact sound background noise from beginning to end of the show, and I don't care because I just noise cancel it out and I'm done. And Audacity does it fantastic. I will say it is the best damn noise cancellation thing I've ever used. Maybe there's better stuff out there, but that definitely suits my needs. Cue Tractor, okay? If you haven't, just lie to me and tell me you have, okay? That's all I can say. Klaatu. Klaatu is one of the most kindest, smartest, most genuine people I've met, period. And he's also smart. I would literally trust him doing anything that was crucial in my life because he's just that good, spot on, never messes up, always delivers. He did a PDF manual on Q-Tractor that someone needs to give him money. That's all I got to say. Beautiful work, screenshots, great descriptions. If you want to look at Q-Tractor, and it's a mid-tier. It's not a super audio editing doll, but it's approaching it, and it's really powerful. That's the tool that lets me edit a podcast in literally 14 minutes, and that's with an 8-minute transcoding process of saving. Lame command line tool. The best part about the command line on Linux is full, total, absolute control and configurability. You know what you're doing. You can specify every little part of it. When I use Lame, I literally punch it out as a true mono, 96 bits. I set the quality to high. So typically, my hour-long podcast is literally the size of 15-minute podcast on other network, a.k.a. if you're in Australia with bandwidth limits, God bless you, Peter 64, wherever you're at. Or if you're in another country, we just have impaired bandwidth. Or you're on your throttled T-Mobile phone. It makes it much easier for people to download their audio with a lot less hassle. And the stupid tool I use is EasyTag ID3. I know there's a command line automatable way I could do it, but it takes a minute, minute and a half. Benefits of Q-Tractor. Q-Tractor is a true multi-track MIDI sequencing tool. It's technically a tool to make music. That's why noise cancellation I do in Audacity. It isn't even available in Q-Tractor. But it's non-destructive. It is non-destructive, non-linear editing, which means everything you do is instantaneous. You are never waiting for processing. You're never waiting for anything to happen. You're just rolling forwards. Unlimited number of tracks per session. This is why I don't like closed source software. They put glass ceilings on all kinds of settings and all kinds of capabilities. Oh, sorry, this one only supports 12 tracks. If you want 16 tracks, you got to upgrade to our Super Pro version. With true free software, the only limitation is your hardware resources. Sure, you can't load 15 billion tracks. You know why? Because you're not on an alpha quantum computer from, 2200 or something. There's also, on each track, you can load unlimited amounts of clips. A track is just a slot, like an old slot car racer. It's just a slot. The race cars are the actual tracks that you put in there, or the clips you put in there. Unlimited redo and undo. God bless, I love that feature. You can literally sit there, play with it for over an hour and a half, and just hold down control and hit Z. You know, just watch everything go brrrr and go back to the very beginning. I love it. Built-in mixer and monitor controls. Monitor is hearing yourself back. So I do like that. But the built-in mixer, the mixer has preset, I don't want to say filters, effects you can put on audio, whether it's noise gating, noise cancellation, EQ settings, a lot. And I gotta look at this. LADSPADSIIVSTI and LV2 and CLAW2 would thank me for saying them right. These are the true professional grade plugins that I don't know any music artists from today, but they all use these kinds of plugins for their audio effects. These are the plugins that literally can enable you to do crazy reverb, crazy types of auto tuning or whatever stuff. Anything you can imagine, it's out there. One of my core beliefs, I've believed in computers for years now, is if you take two applications, one of them has a plug-in architecture or an add-on architecture, and the other one doesn't, the one with the plug-in architecture will always destroy the other piece of software because you're allowing other people to make it better. QTractor, these are the plugins, LADSPADSSIVSTI. They're the plug-in architecture that literally anyone can stop and think, I would really love if I could make audio do this. And then you get smart people, smarter than me, sit down and make the plugins, and then they upload them for free. And with QTractor, all you literally have to do, copy it into the right folder, close QTractor, start QTractor, you're done. No fancy tricks, no registry editing, no nothing. It just works. I do say I have a little bit of a screenshots from the VM. Now, while that is loading, I'm going to ask people out there a really dumb question. DinnyMedia.com is mentioned every single Android App Addicts episode. Does anybody know what it is? Dinny Media? D-I-N-I-M-E-D-A? Media? Anyone? Well, it's a trick question because it's nothing. It's a redirect. Every time you go there, you actually get redirected to podnuts.com. So if anyone wants to come up real quick and just grab some stuff, please help yourself while this loads. It's going to take a couple seconds. I will say the number one reason to do podcasting while this is loading is for fun. If your goal with doing a podcast is to make money, get the hell out of this room, is all I got to say. Because it's too hard. It's too hard. If you do it with the goal of having fun, money can come to you. And I will say that's the honest to God's truth. Okay. The VM is all loaded up. This is in no shape, way, or form like a super gaming laptop. But I will admit it's an i7 with 8 gigs of RAM. So it loaded pretty quick. A VM, the only thing you got to really know about a VM is you're always limited by the amount of free resources on your computer you're running it on. So the better the computer you're running a VM on, the better your experience is going to be running this this VM. If you do want this VM, it is freely downloadable. All you got to do is ping me at doordoorgeek@gmail.com or mail at pons.com.
Yeah, I use that same VM for editing SMLR.
Yeah.
It works great.
I will admit it's like hitting a baseball. You can tell someone a million times how to hit a baseball, but they have to literally pick up the bat and swing it. And it's not perfectly easy the first time you use it. There is a hump you got to get over. But it's really not a hard hump or a long hump. All I do every couple days when I when I get new audio synced to me by my BitTorrent sync with my other co-host, I literally just load up the VM. I come in, I browse my network, I copy the audio down to my local computer. I load up Audacity, and then I just basically do a noise cancellation. Nothing really fancy. Let me see here. I believe I have audio in here. Yeah, I have some audio right here. The only thing you got to remember about this VM is a little bit tricky. Jack is a great tool. Some applications need Jack. Some applications think Jack is poison. Audacity thinks Jack is poison, at least in this configuration. So you literally just have to come up and stop Jack. Once you do that, Audacity will work just fine. So I'm going to just here do an open with Audacity. The bigger the file, literally the longer this kind of Audacity stuff take. So I do encourage you, if you're just starting out or you really want to do a lot, the smaller the podcast, the much easier it is to get through editing, especially if you have limited time. Yes, sir?
Okay, since you're running the VM as, since you're running your tools under a VM, do you have trouble making the physical real-world integration through, or are you just running it through the USB port to port that from your physical port into your virtual?
No, here's the beautiful thing about virtual machines. We've all had, we probably all had the experience of you plug up a USB device and then you have to insist to the VM, no. Host, let it go. I want it to be in the virtual machine. There's a exclusive lock with a lot of things like USB or CD-ROMs, not with the audio stack. The audio stack in your operating system will seamlessly work with both. So quite literally, you can load up this VM, load up QTractor, hit record, talk into whatever kind of mic you have, and it's going to work.
It is going to pull right from the host.
It's going to pull right from the host without.
I'm more familiar with large-scale VMware installations.
Right. Well, I can tell you at my work on our VMware cluster, the audio stack is the same. But if you hook up a USB thumb drive to a vSphere instance, it won't work. It has to be local on the computer running the, or you have to go down to the server room and plug it in. First thing I do whenever I load up Audacity is I literally expand it just to make things clearer. Technically, these things are Coke bottles. I mean, very bad. 2200 plus and just as bad the other eye kind of thing. So I expand it just so it's easier to look at. And the one main goal with audio is you never want to touch the bottom or the top. Once you touch the bottom or the top, game over, clipping has happened, it's going to sound horrible. Garbage in, garbage out, done. Re-record. You can see what I try to do is I always try to have the audio at most in the normal talking go 40% width of the whole range. That's so when someone does laugh or get excited, they got some room to spare, you know what I mean? So you can see, like, right here, something louder happened, and it still didn't touch. Never touch. It will turn red, and that's when I hit Control-A, select everything, and delete. And I just start over, because it's too hard. Too hard to get it really, really clean. All you got to do for noise cancellation is, like I said, find a quieter spot. I just go in, shift, tap. It doesn't have to be a large spot. And I'll say it's almost dangerous to pick a large spot. You don't want to go too big because then you're filtering out a lot of different types of noise. What you're doing is you're basically taking this small clip, pulling it out, and saying, okay, now anything that sounds like this, get out of my audio. Okay? So the trick really is that when you do this, hopefully the noise is not in the same acoustic range as the person's voice. If you have someone on your show that talks like this, and there's a train in the back, really deep thudding train, you're going to mess with that guy's voice when you do that noise cancellation. That's to be quite honest, that's why I really do like it when I have a host that has a definitive higher or lower pitched voice. It seems like when they're in the middle, it's a little bit harder to get rid of. So I just hit effect, noise removal, get noise profile. Then I just control A, effect, noise removal, and okay. I never change any of the settings. Why? Because someone smarter than me set those settings. So I just say okay, and I've never in my life had a problem with it. Audacity. Here's the pain and suffering part. If you, this was, I think, like an hour and 10-minute episode. This is a quad-core i7, 8 gigs of RAM, running a desktop that takes less than 100 megs of RAM up. Okay? And no cycles, no processor cycles. Everything's disabled, except for BitTorrent Sync, but that's a long story. And this is how long this is taking. So if you have a box that used to be an XP box and you're doing this, if you can do a 10 or 15 minute podcast, you're gold. You take it up to an hour, you're literally going to like want to go and fry chicken while this is doing its job. I always, it's obvious, isn't it? That's okay. I'm just going to stop this. And basically, in Audacity, you never save. It's kind of like GIMP in Photoshop. You never actually save. What you actually do is export. And I will say this, on my initial recording, when I'm literally talking to the mic and I hit record, my initial save and all subsequent saving in the same file format whenever possible with the same settings whenever possible. The easiest way to damage audio is to transcode it and transcode it into something else and then transcode it into something else and then transcode it into something else. True audio files will tell you one conversion is all you actually want. So what I always do is I always go down to Aug, and in Audacity, I always change the quality to 10. Yes, it's a bigger file size, but it's Aug. It ain't big. It ain't big. It's not Wave. Okay, it's not at all getting close. But quite literally, audio files, if you give them a Wave file and a Aug 10 file and ask them to listen to it, they will have a hard time telling which one is which. And I will say, even if you're going from the same format to the same format, Aug Quality 10 to Aug Quality 10 in Audacity, you still have to wait because it literally has to read from the beginning of the file to the end of the file, read it, and write it. This is where if you do have an SSD that you don't care about it failing at a random time, this is the perfect kind of task to put on SSD. It will jump in speed kind of ridiculously. Okay, when I'm done doing my initial noise filtering and everything, all I basically do is I come back, I load Jack back up. I then go to my other virtual desktop, load QTractor. Now, this is a true garbage in, garbage out system. What I mean by that is the work you put in initially, you get paid off for the rest of the time you use QTractor. Thank you, Rich. Recent Linux for the rest of us. So I already have a show in here that I already edited. Right now, this file does not exist, so it's not going to show any waveform, but QTractor knows it's supposed to be there. This is why I love QTractor. I can load it in here. It's a non-destructive editor. I can start to do my editing. Then I notice there's a buzz I hear. I didn't notice that. Let me go isolate it, and I hear it right about here. I save. I go into the other tool. I take out the noise. I export it. I open up QTractor. It's just a pointer to the file. QTractor doesn't change nothing. So I can change that master file a billion times, and I never have to do anything in QTractor except for load it. And once I load it, the file's already there, and it still works. That was not good. Forgot to hold down the function key. I forgot it had that. We have a mixer, a genuine multi, I'm trying to remember what Klaatu called it, multi-band mixer in here, which means that we can literally do some very interesting stuff. Exactly. And if it can be messed up, you know I will do everything in my power. My first talk at a conference was actually how to break a computer. Here's the actual mixer. Now, this is the only time where you actually might get a little bit intimidated. And it's because there's a lot of stuff that can be going on this screen. But in reality, it's just each track is represented by a different stack here where you can increase or decrease the bass volume to it. Slide the volume from right to left, the balance. You can record, mute, or go solo on any individual track. So if you want to isolate a track and hit play and listen to it a couple times, all you got to do is hit S up here. This top part, that's where the magic happens, okay? That's where you can really go crazy and have really good effects. Like over here, this is the last end of the audio chain. This is the last thing the audio hits before it gets published. And what I have in here is called a limiter. What a limiter does is it ensures you will never clip. It makes it impossible. And this is a hard limiter. There's soft limiters that can clip, but it's harder to, which you would think would be softer to, but whatever. But so this is a hard limiter, which means no matter what, it cannot clip. I literally played around with these settings a lot before I felt comfortable with it. And I had some advice from a good friend who does music, so he helped me a lot. But these plugins are really where it gets insane. I tried to make it clear the power that comes with them, but really I cannot do it justice. If we back out, that is the total types of plugins you can do. Now, if you just go on your distribution and install QTractor, no, you're not going to have all these effects. You're going to have maybe two. But there is a lot on this VM. And some of them interesting. Most of them are music related. But either way, it's, to be honest, a really cool tool in order to get stuff done. I cannot implore people enough. Mail at podnuts.com if you have any questions. Without being overly repetitive, what I said for years on my podcast was support those who support you, support those that help support free software kind of thing. If no one from this contacts me ever about any kind of questions, I'm literally going to be upset. Because the people out there who are podcasting are thinking I'm actually being disingenuous, and I won't actually help you. I love helping people because it always gives me an opportunity to, A, hone my skill of helping people. I consider that to be one of my best traits, but also it challenges me to keep on my toes and learn, period. I'm never going to be satisfied with knowing everything, and I always want to go a little bit further. So any kinds of questions you guys can think of, do not hesitate. If I ever get the slides back up running right, mail@podnuts.com is the email address. We do weekly stuff. If you check us out on Google Plus or anything, you'll see shows going live. It's good times. That's all I got to say. I've had a couple people ask me about that. It will be downloadable. There is the one from last year that, so I've done this a couple times, that you literally can download and listen to it. Every year, I think, honestly, not trying to sound dumb, I think it gets a little bit better, a little bit more honed. But mail@podnuts.com is the key. And I will also say, I always ask people, if you really like what you learned today and you really got genuine value out of this, support Ohio Linux Fest. Okay. It costs them a lot of money every year to put these kinds of shows on. And if we do not support them, we're not going to have one come back to next year, period, bar none. And I will say this. This podcast was actually kind of sponsored by a really good friend of mine, Mark Cockrell, elementopi.com. Long story, it's supposed to be a pun. He's old, you'll have that. But his podcast, Everyday Linux, Life in the Context of Linux, I think is the tagline. He bought a shirt. There were shirts down here you guys could have. He bought them. Okay? Really nice guy. And I cannot implore people enough. Listen to normal people talking about Linux and how they use Linux. That's the only way I feel you can really understand use cases and workflows and how to do stuff and when to do stuff and why to do stuff. So elementopi.com. Exactly how it spells or how it sounds. Everyday Linux. I want to thank everyone for coming out. Yes, sir? So I definitely encourage people, do what you can, support those who support you, support free software, and I thank everyone for coming out. Any other questions?
You made a comment about Jack.
Mm-hmm. No? Thank you, everyone, for coming out. Thank you.